Welcome to the upstreamlife.com. I'm your founder and editor, Vishal Krishna. I love data. I've been using data for the last 20 years, you know, and I've used platforms where I had to use my intuition, but I've got a platform that's intuitive. I've got the founder of Traxen with me. I've got Neha. Neha, how are you?
Thank you so much, Vishal, for having me.
What does Traxen do? Just tell them quickly.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, yes. Traxen is essentially a private market intelligence platform. We track startups globally. We work with private market investors like venture capital funds, private equity funds, and large corporates, helping them tell about all the startups, you know, across all the countries globally.
So go check them. They have different pricing plans. And if you're a corporate, more so, check it out. And by the way, if you're a startup, you need to use data, so check them out too. Thank you, Neha.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Neha, thank you for being on the Upstream Life. You know, I've been a fan of Traxen for 10 years now, and we've never met. I've always wanted to meet you as a journalist in my previous avatars. You know, it took 10 years. That's okay. It's not too late, is it? I want to start with you in the earlier years. You're from IIT, of course, IIT, yeah. Bombay.
You're right.
And you were a consultant, BCG, yes. Of course, good pedigree. And then why startup at the time in 2013? As right. a journalist, I remember the only platforms we use were Capital Line,
right.
IMRB data.
Yes.
And it was, you had to hard code the thing because you had to be intuitive enough to use those right. things at the time.
Right.
But what was your hypothesis to start this?
Right. So thanks firstly for having me on the show. Excited to be here yeah. and to be speaking to you. So Traxen for me was born more out of a problem that you wanted to solve versus that, you know, you wanted to do a startup. And a quick background about myself, you know, so born and brought up in Bombay, did my undergrad in IIT, Bombay Computer Science, initially worked in BCG and then Sequoia Capital. Right. When I was working as a VC investor, this was a decade back when, yes. you know, I think the VC ecosystem was still very early on, you know, in India as well.
Very
as, you know,
nascent, yes, at the time, yeah.
I realized that, you know, like it was struggle to actually collate data. So, for instance, you have to do things like, you know, simple things like you like T2C brands today, right? You want to find out all the companies which are offering you D2C brands across different categories. It's non-trivial. You know, once you, if you have to do that, you as an analyst have to go to Google, search for companies. You'll spend like a week creating a map. Okay, these are the companies into pet care, skincare, cosmetic, all these other categories, right? That was a very time-consuming thing. The second thing is that whenever you're meeting a company, the first thing you want to figure out, who else exists in that market, right? And again, this was like a manual thing that you have to do. And then I realized that all the people in the different funds were actually rebuilding the wheel, right? Like I was doing it and, you know, other people in other funds globally, etc., were doing it. And then we realized that, you know, there has to be like solved in a better way.
Yes.
And obviously we since spend, like I spent like a, so interestingly, the first version of Traxen was coded by me initially to solve my own
You're
problem.
You're also a coder?
Yes. So I had done comp science undergrad in IIT Bombay, but when I started working for the initial, you know, 3 years, I did not do coding, but you know, I still, this was something that I still knew. So, you know, I kind of brushed my skills and that was the
Did you build it on
version.
Java, the early version, or what did you build it on?
Yeah, Java. Yes.
Wow.
Right.
Nobody would know this fact.
Yeah.
I mean, that's beautiful, right? I'm glad you said data. I mean, we were so used to public markets because data is available.
Right.
At the time, if you're a reporter and you were covering public markets, your life was set because there was right. data. But if you're in the private markets,
right.
you had it. I'll give you an analogy, okay, so that we can jump into why Traxen matters. In 2013-14, I remember the time frame, maybe January to then 2014, we had to write a story on who are the top angel investors
right.
in India.
Yes.
And you know, you were right. It's, we tried the early Google, zero. Right. Yes. You know, you and then, you know, yeah. you hustle around and find out. And, you know, we have the common set of friends now. So the data was only as good as your connections.
Right. Yes.
So, and then we'd have these 6-7 names. And say, oh, yeah. here are the top angel investors. You know, that was yeah. how we did the news right. at the time. But you wanted to change these things,
yes.
correct?
Yeah. So essentially what we realized that if you look at the parallel public markets, it has a lot of platforms, right? Like you have Bloomberg, you have FactSet, you have Capital IQ,
yes.
you have so many ones.
Many.
If you look at the private markets as an asset class, you know, it. So 10 years back, we had this foresight, this will also become large, right? If you look at a typical limited partner allocation across the different
yes.
asset classes today, if they allocate 70 to 80% to private equities, they today also allocate 10 to 15% to private markets.
Correct.
For some of them, it's even higher. Like if you look at the endowment fund, you know, that's nearly 30%, like a Harvard endowment fund would have 30% to private markets, right? So that has become a sizable asset class. So it'll also require platforms like these, which exist in the public market. markets? And can we build a global platform in this space? So that's how, you know, initially started. And we really wish that a platform like this existed when we were investors.
So yeah, so when you coded this,
yeah,
again, not many people would know this. And I didn't know this till you told me, you know, when we were having coffee or water or whatever, you know, you said you wanted to build this for the US market.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. How tough was that? How did you start doing this?
Right. So not a lot of people know that actually Traxxion got started in US first. So I was doing my MBA in Stanford.
Yes.
You know, post my stint as a VC. And that is where the Traxxion was also born. So, you know, 2012 to 14 is when I was in Stanford. 2013, we actually got incubated in a Lightspeed summer program, which is a program that they have at some of the top universities, mm-hmm. wherein you can actually spend the summers over there. And they actually give you money without equity to work on your own idea.
And was it Palo Alto?
Yes, mm-hmm. Like Sandhill Road, mm-hmm. in a very close to the Stanford mm-hmm. campus. You know, you can also, like, you also get to work with their team. So we also worked with some of the senior partners, right? And working on their problem because they are the customer segment for us. So it worked out brilliantly. And the first, you know, 3-4 months, we actually spend there in just building out the product. So the other thing about our thing is that it's a very greenfield idea, right? Yes. It's not like it exists earlier.
So even in the US, the same problem exists?
Same problem, yes.
So what were they using at the time?
The same thing what people were using here, like Google.
Or before Google, they had these other terminals. Other terminals would not have anything
Nothing
private,
about
right?
private. Yes.
So is that opaque, is it, the industry
yes,
at the time?
Yeah.
So yes. When you got in, okay, Stanford, you were doing right. this program, you were building it there. What are some of the early lessons that you learned from people there before right. you moved back?
Yeah. So one of the things is that, you know, so we actually experimented with a pure tech-based solution for that, for the problem, versus a more curated solution. Mm-hmm. So one was like at $100, one was at $5,000 per month,
right?
We realized that there were more takers for the more curated solution of like $5,000 a month, mm-hmm. right? Because the end customers that you're working with are VC and PE investors, yes. corp devs, which are highly paid professionals. Mm. So they require a good amount of curation of data, mm. right? So that was one of the initial learning that, so the initial sectors that we launched is, for instance, Internet of Things,
yes.
right? Cybersecurity. In India, actually, for instance, in parallel, consumer sectors used to get a lot of investment. In US, it was the other way around. Most of the investors that we met said that, you know, allocate consumer very less. It's mainly enterprise. Mm. Right? So we actually launched.
It's very mature there, right?
Right, right. And so we actually launched with all the enterprise sectors, you know, to begin with. And similarly, so I want companies in cybersecurity mm-hmm. doing this vertical or that vertical, network security, so the entire stack. And I want to see the whole map and I want to see new upcoming companies, etc. Right?
So you built so that model.
Yes,
so
that's
with
the problem
the
that we solved. We created the data for that mm-hmm. initially. And when we had initial set of paying customers, then we realized, okay, wow, you know, this is, you know, the way you say that, you know, you've hit a product market fit
yeah.
initially, and then you realize that. So that was a time when we realized that, you know, okay, this is a product market fit. The customers are really liking it. They're getting value out
okay.
of it. So then we started to, we incorporated the company in India. We actually debated whether to incorporate the company in US versus India. And, you know, people ask us, when is the first time we thought about going IPO? It was probably when you were incorporating. So we always thought that, you know, this is going to be a cash rich company because of the financial, you know, because even if you look at other financial data, that's how. And Indian markets will eventually like it, right? So, you know, you can say it probably because we
were investors. So the IPO decision was made then itself?
So it was not.
Or was it not conscious?
It was not conscious, but because we were investors, we had seen this, you know,
play out. Yeah.
And we were conscious about the choice that, you know, once you register outside, then the choice of having in India, that goes away. Mm. Right? And this is a good option if you want to continue to build a company.
It's
so
interesting.
Obviously, when it'll happen, you're not sure.
You're not sure. Absolutely. Right. In the US, you build for the enterprise.
Yeah.
And that must have taught you something about the way you gather data, right? India is data starved in many ways. Even
right.
today, it's a big opportunity right. and companies like you are solving. So in the US, what were some of the variables that the VCs would ask for? Because you built an enterprise model for them.
Right.
Why would they want, it's that means you work with private equity mostly, right? What variables would they look at and which, and did you at the time think that these same variables would work in an Indian context?
Right. So the problems were the same.
Okay.
So the US investors were looking at sectors like a cybersecurity, Internet of Things, networking, etc., infrastructure, big data infrastructure, open source.
Yeah, back then the cloud thing was big.
Yes,
yes.
Right. All the core sectors. In India, people would be looking at probably consumers more
mostly,
initially.
Yes.
Right. So, but the problems were the same, that I want to look at all the companies which exist. I want to, you know, across the whole value chain which exists. Okay. Right? And the new upcoming companies which are there. So can you firstly, you know, help me find out those companies, you know, evaluate them, etc. So the problem was the same. The coverage would have been sort of different.
I understand. You came back.
Right.
And like I said, you have to build everything from scratch here. I told you, as a journalist, we'd use MCA data, back then registrar of companies, we'd call them, then capital line for public markets, those kind of things, right? How did you create it from scratch? I mean, in a sense, did you take, obviously, available data, then obviously this, you scrape through the net and then create these maps? Was it harder at the time? Because we can then talk about Mohandas Pai and how did that happen, right? What did he believe in at the time? I think he was your first champion, one of the few to the champion in the beginning. How did that journey happen? Day one here to all the way to angel investment here. Then we could talk about subsequent Series A and all that.
Yeah, so it is a non-trivial problem. Because, you know, if I compare it to the public markets, you have only 50,000 companies listed globally and you have fairly structured data about them. In the private markets, you have millions of companies, right? Firstly, you have to find the relevant set of million companies which is there and very unstructured information about them, right? So obviously, it's a non-trivial problem and you have to build a lot of technology to be able to do that, as well as, you know, you need to have curation also in the, as part of the team. So I think that's how we started building. We started, the way we launched is from the problem that people really which matter to people the most, which is basically, you know, your sector-based coverage, etc., companies. That's where we enter, and then over time we have expanded in terms of the data that we offer about companies, right? All of that.
Any particular sector you started with?
This cybersecurity.
It's interesting. Not many people realize this. In 13, 14, 15, a lot of cybersecurity companies were looked at. And from an Indian perspective also, would that be the same?
No, so India, it was very different. India, it was mainly consumer sectors. US, it was primarily enterprise. So US people, most of the people that we said is, we don't look at consumers much. We just look at enterprise sectors.
Okay, tell me about this. In India, you start with consumer. Anything specific in consumer?
I think all the sectors which are getting, like, you know, your online retail was one big sector which was there. You know, across all, you know, your brands was probably just very early on, which was just getting started. But I think e-commerce and the whole marketplace and a lot of platforms were some of the sectors that people really wanted to, you know, sort of see a lot of companies in.
And how robust was the feedback, in a sense? You remember your first customer sell in India?
So for the first 4 years of Traxion, I was actually based in US. And so US was where I used to do my sales. And then Abhishek was, who's my co-founder, was based out of India. And the initial set of customers he would have sold in India. So I remember, you know, all the US customers that we initially sold off to. And then, you know, obviously Indian customers, which were then eventually now that, you know, we...
Talk about the VC engagement here. You raised money here, of course. You must have flown down for it, of course, and made the pitch and everything. What are the toughest questions that you got asked at the time? Being a data-led company, there's so much competition out there. There were people who were saying that we will get data done from smaller towns. We'll get these army of people to scrape the net. We'll annotate the data, annotate it, and then we will get somebody to clean it up. And then we'll apply technology on top of that, right? There were so many models flying there. How did you pitch to these VCs and win them?
So for us, I think the interesting part was that we were probably from the ecosystem earlier and VCs were also our customers. So interestingly, the way it happened is that a lot of our rounds were inbound. That, you know, some customer who was using it, who was deriving value, and then, you know, they reached out, okay, if there's a round or if there's any construct which is happening. And we were lucky to have got a lot of, you know, good investors through that. But yeah, I mean, it was, I think the questions were probably the same, you know, as VCs ask. So there are two things which really matter in the business, you know, your TAM and your moat, right? Apart from the execution, I think that people were confident that that you'll be able to probably do.
The TAM, the moat. What was the moat for you at the time that nobody would do it in using tech?
No. So financial data, like data businesses actually, you know, have more moat, I would say, than the SaaS business, because there's so much things which goes behind the scene, right? Like, for instance, even if you know today the Google search result, right? You get the result, you have the, you know, output, you copy it, but what goes beyond, behind it, right? You don't know that. That's a whole iceberg which is there. So that is what data is, right? You know, you see probably like the transactions. But what is the engine which basically keeps it updated, you know, every hour globally in a real-time basis across so many sources, right? That's the secret sauce. So in data, actually, the moat is probably higher than I would say than like a software businesses. And you have to obviously invest in a lot of tech process, you know, behind it to make that happen.
Yes.
And, you know, like there are so many engines which happen, right? Today, for instance, we have data of a variety of types. We have data in a variety of countries, right? Yes. Like you have financials, transactions, etc. A lot of them have non-English speaking language as the source of the data, right? To be able to do that, process it, standardize it, you know, those are sort of non-trivial.
So would you say that they would have liked the fact that it's insightful? Rather than just data. That's
yes,
mode,
of course. That's
right?
The basic about data, that it has to be actionable.
Hmm.
It has to solve a business problem.
Okay.
You know, if it is easy for me to do that using tech, for instance, like even if today I give you the entire list of legal entities which are registered in a country, that's not very helpful.
Yeah.
What you would want to understand is that, you know, I want to look at this business. I want to today look at Gen AI companies.
Hmm.
So I want to look at only those businesses. Right.
Yeah, let's use that as an example. So you'd go deeper into this Gen AI, how many companies are doing it, who are their founders,
right?
And it's more insightful than that, I'm just sure.
Right. So, for instance, if you take any sector, like today everyone, all investors want to figure out, you know, Gen AI companies want to look at that. So what we would offer that is basically the whole coverage around that. You know, what are the companies? What are the companies across the whole value chain, right? Some are doing applications, some are doing more infrastructure layer within that. What are the different sub-verticals within
it,
that.
Yes.
What are the companies within that? What are the new companies which keep coming? So we throw a lot of technology to be able to track it. To give you an example, we track all the domain registered globally. On the back end, we track more than 700 million entities, right? So any domain which got registered yesterday, we would have it on our back end today. So you are able to do that to be able to capture those companies. And then obviously that has to be very actionable, curated, right? Plus the other things that, so that's one part, which is, you know, your whole discovery.
Yes.
The second part is that whenever you're looking at a company, you want to figure out more information about it, right? Who else exists in that market? Who are the comps? Who are the global equivalents, etc.
Yes.
Right? So that is
it goes into that granular level too.
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk about the opportunity in terms of, I know you're a global business. You do, you have a third of the business in the US, third in Europe, and third in India. Let's talk three markets.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about America briefly at the start. So let's start with India, you primarily because of the IPO year. What is the experience 6 years selling here? It's mostly remote. Did you guys start off like any consulting business in America that go send people and then say use our data? Did it start like that in India?
Right.
Was it remote? Did Indian people like remote buying of data remotely?
Right.
How did that happen?
Yeah. So if you look at our customer segment, it's primarily nearly half of our customer segments are private market investors, which includes your venture capital funds, private
in India
equity
also.
Funds. Yes. And the other half are corporates, wherein it's primarily their corporate team, M&A teams, and their digital transformation teams, innovation teams that we work with. If you look at these, you know, they are not people you can cold call or you can do that. So for us, it's a lot of inbound based, you know, sales that happens. So, you know, we have a lot of content. Someone is searching for, say, you know, semiconductor companies, right? They'll come across our content and that's how we get leads. So that bit's a big funnel. And then we have a sales team that does the conversion, which is primarily, you know, your Zoom calls or remote demos, etc. And they take you through the platform and they, you know, help you solve, you know, what type of data you're looking at and how you can sort of derive this thing. And our sales cycle is fairly short because ideally someone who's coming in has already seen some part of the data, has already seen it, and then, you know, it's a very high intent lead.
So they're okay, they were okay with the remote model too. So
yes,
they would just go subscribe online and then your team would guide them through the platform. So that was it.
Yes.
Typically in a startup world at the time, the sales cycle, especially in the B2B world, was 9 months. How was it for you in the start in India? I'm just covering India at this point in time. How long was it vis-a-vis the US?
Right.
I'm sure that in the US it'll be faster.
So our sales cycle is fairly short, I would say, as compared to, you know, most ones that you see. Because if you look at our average price point, it's around, you know, like $10,000 realized pricing that you have, you know, across all the users. So at that price point, people are fine with buying remotely, I would say, right? So our sales cycle is typically 1.5 months, you know, plus or minus. But, you know, so from the time that you give the first demo to the closure, you know, this is the time. So it's been fairly efficient because I think because of the price point and because of the nature that, you know, you're already, it does not require like an integration.
Yeah.
Right. It's like a data that you can actually see and you can see the value of that more instantly than having to, you know, being back lopsided sort of. So I think that's why it has been sort of fairly efficient in that case.
Okay. So the team in the US was smaller. You were there for 4 years, of course, compared to the India side. Was there interaction from both sides saying, okay, what are some of the common themes in both countries?
Right.
What was the exchange of ideas from both countries? Somebody was selling in the US, you were selling in the US? Or?
Right. Yeah, so interestingly, we had a team initially in the US, which was primarily doing sales.
Mm-hmm.
Our entire data production would happen from India.
Okay.
So it's a typical make from India, sell globally story.
Mm-hmm.
We would have data about, you know, global companies like in UK, Germany, US, etc. But the entire technology and data production happened from India.
Yeah.
Right. So that is one of the, so even if you look at, you know, like the public markets or other data, India has been a good source of building the data.
Yes.
Right. And you have the build, you have the, you know, offshore entities
here,
over here, and then you would have the sales center a lot in the US. So, you know, we are actually building a product out of India. So that happens. So the entire building infrastructure happens from there. The sales team, which was selling to APAC and Europe, was in India. And then initially the sales team, which was selling to US, was in US. Then we realized that a lot of our sales, so when we were starting, we did not know whether feet on street will work or inside sales. We realized that people are fine with buying remotely. Mm-hmm. When we realized that, you know, inside sales is actually working, then the India team was also able to sell very nicely to Europe and other countries. Mm-hmm. So we then, today, our entire sales team is actually based out of India.
Oh, that's fascinating to know. I don't know, the typical India user is a banker. I know the VCs are, right, would love your product, but what about the bankers? What about the large, some of the corporates? I mean, what sectors would the corporates really use your data?
Right.
I mean, that also gives me a sense of, because corporate M&A in India with startup world has been very, you know, it's not big, right? Or acquisitions have not been big here. Who are some of the guys who really use this data and say, hey, we may not acquire it, but still want to keep track of? What sectors are interesting for you?
Right. So corporates, interestingly, is equally large for us today. What we realize is that corporates have very niche mandates, right? Like, for instance, someone is into IT consulting, they want to look at all the IT consulting companies. Someone is into retail, they want to look at all the retail tech companies or e-commerce companies or enabler companies in that ecosystem. Versus the VCs, which have little bit broader mandates.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
So here, there, and the other thing is that startup, you know, VCs have a deal flow. Corporates typically have lesser deal flow, right? But so if they have to do like an M&A, they have to really scan the market and go out, etc., which is there. So that's why, you know, for corporates also works very well because, you know, they are looking at sort of sectors which are focused or in line with their businesses. And then they're looking at all the companies which are coming up there. So that's one use case wherein we have a lot of customers. Another use case is your innovation teams. To give you an example, today, if you're looking at vendors for any emerging technology, like if a bank wants to implement an eKYC solution, they want to look at all the eKYC vendors, right? You would have some of the... So currently, there's no platform, right? Like, you would have some platforms which gives you the top 1,000 vendors globally, like a Workday, etc. But today you want to look at a lot of other emerging vendors, right?
Yeah.
Or if an oil company wants to figure out all vendors which are coming up in oil and gas, right? Either in education, either in maintenance, etc. Right? Or agri company wants to figure out companies which are using drones for giving you crop health or crop health detection, right?
That sector I'm familiar with. There are quite a few there, yes.
Right.
So they look at it for that.
So you want to also look at it for partnering with your new age vendors. Right, so
that's a good use case for me because they might not want to acquire, they might want to be they might want you as a preferred vendor.
Yes. So that's a big use case that we today serve and we work with for that. You know, you have innovation teams, you have digital transformation team, some of the BU heads. So we work also with that segment.
How do they use digital transformation, for example? How would your data help them?
The similar thing. So for instance, if a bank wants to figure out all companies which are into document processing, so they, you know, for instance, bank have a lot of documents, right? They want to be able to use that for various other things, right? So there are companies which are helping you do that, right? So across your whole value chain, there are these companies.
So it's discovery plus. It's discovery plus understanding who really is doing a great job out there, right? How robust is your verification in a sense? Just asking. You said, you know, a lot of other platforms just throw up 1,000 names. Like, morning I was searching for who competes with in the CRO space, right. A clinical research organization space. And you just show up these 15 names, but it didn't mean anything to me other than a couple of points. I'd, okay, these were the investors of this company versus this company. Yeah. What's the robustness of this investor and this investor?
Right.
You've got to intuitively do it rather than the data telling you or mapping it out for you, right? So how robust is the verification of this data when you do this?
No. So there is a lot of, process that goes behind it. So if we have to track like the CRO market, there'll be, so we have out of the 750 member team that we have a 90 member sector focus analyst team who's covering different sectors.
Okay.
So they also do the final curation of the companies, with what goes onto the platform, whether it's a relevant company, not relevant company, what within that space that it is doing, it also maps onto that, right? So only then it becomes very actionable for you as a user when, that other information is there, plus the other, matrices of the company, how big is the company, etc., how old is the company. You also have those information. So then that becomes very actionable and something that would take someone like a week to collate the data, that gets done in 2 hours.
It's interesting that I'm glad to see that Indian corporates use Traxon to track preferred vendors and how can we partner with, I hope the startups are watching this. It's good news for me. In the American companies, they use data to acquire mostly or again use them as vendors. What do they do?
Right. So it's a similar use case. Mm-hmm. Obviously, US is a much deeper market for corporates, wherein you have many more global 2000 Fortune 500 corporations. So today, for instance, we work with over 70 Fortune 500 corporations. And primarily, they're there in a lot of these countries like US or Europe or Japan, right? So there you have big corporates, I would say. The use case is the same. They're obviously looking at very specific sectors based on the industries that they have.
All right. The value base is higher in the US for you or Europe?
Yes,
or?
The realized pricing is higher for us.
Because there are many more individuals who subscribe in a company to your product, right?
Exactly.
They buy a plan and...
Yes.
Okay. There's so much talk, right? I mean, 750 member team. It's a leadership question. Some people would say that does a product team like you need 750 people? Do you want to tell us why? How do you handle 750 people?
So if you look at most financial data companies, right? These are, you require like it's... So we have a 100 member tech team out of there, but you require a lot more other things, right? Like you require a sector focus analyst team, you require, you have data across, your financials in 20 plus countries, capitals 20 plus countries. You need like curation, which is there. Mm. Obviously that keeps getting automated, but you still requires very enterprise grade data. And even if you look at most other financial data companies in the public market, where the data I would say is much more structured, there also you have teams which have to do that final curation because, you have to make it very actionable for the investors. So that's why, that explains
sort of
the team. And obviously, like building the org is a process. Initially, it's tough, and as you build your org, as you have your senior leadership, etc., grow, I think then it gets, more streamlined across the years.
Correct. Did you take care of the tech initially?
No, so my co-founder used to take care of tech, and I would take care of the GTM. And the other.
It's interesting. You built the first platform, but then you moved it, and it's great. So your co-founder runs the tech at this point of time, and you do the GTM, and you've divided teams between different sectors, and you have C-suite leaders across. These sectors, right?
Right. So, my co-founder has a similar background. So, he's a graduate from IIT Kanpur, computer science. He was an investor, Axel Partners. So, very similar sort of background. So, that is why he'd worked with a few tech companies before he became an investor. So, I think that's why, we had this thing. Right now, obviously, there is, good CXO level, VP level, etc., which is there. Given the fact that we are in the 10th year of the company.
That's a great way to build an org. Neha, what's interesting for me is the IPO has it allowed you to find time for yourself? And, you have a large organization, 750 members. How do you balance everything? And how has IPO helped you really?
So I would say IPO is a great platform. Mm-hmm. And, when you're privately listed, you typically have, two options as a company. You can either go for an M&A, wherein, you do an M&A and then you get free after, say, 2 years. And the other option is IPO. And what I say to a lot of the founders is that, IPO is not an exit.
Yes.
IPO is like starting off day one, right? Because here you're committing that you're there with the company for the next 20 years, right? So I think it just provides you a lot of clarity, I would say. And the other way that, you can also look at IPO is that you are studying whether you are having exams or not exams, right? In, you know, after getting listed, you are having like exams every quarter.
Yeah, right?
So that just keeps you on the toes. It just keeps your entire org very focused. So
these are like your trimester. These are like these trimester exams that you have, right? how did you handle the earnings call, for example? Right. How was it for you?
I mean, so right now we have completed a year after IPO, so it has been, you know, like four quarters of there. So now I would say it's very streamlined. You know, and I think but I think it just builds a good discipline.
Absolutely.
Across the entire org, right?
And you call this day zero for you. Why?
Because, you know, here we are there, we are committing that we are there for the company for the next 20 years. And this is the key thing that we are going to be spending time on. And that is why I say it's a day zero. Right. Okay. When you're starting the company, you know, you're still, you know, you can still take a fork in the next, say, 7 to 8 years. Here, it's more for the long term. Like, even if you look at most other founders who have listed their companies, they've been at the helm of the companies even decades after getting listed.
Correct.
Right. So that's how you basically see this as a
job. Got it. Did you consciously, obviously, when you started up, you said that maybe there's a route to an IPO. Maybe it was unconscious. As you came closer, the preparation must have been harder. How did you manage that preparation to the listing? This could be some good advice to the founders who want to list. How did you prepare?
Right. So one is we continue to be excited about the opportunity even 10 years after we started. We realized that this is a very deep market, and you know, we can continue to build a large company. It's a good opportunity that we have sort of caught on and build a good ground. So that was one of the things. The second thing is that we knew that the Indian public markets liked profitable stories.
Yes.
So the day, the year actually we turned cash flow positive, that is when we started preparing for the IPO. So we turned cash flow positive end of 2020, and 2021 is when we actually started preparing for the IPO, hired the bankers, and then file the DRHP. Right? And after filing the DRHP, you get an approval that's valid for a year, and we were lucky to get listed despite the markets being tough.
The sentiment was very bad, right? How was your expectation? How was the feeling like at the bell?
It was something that you've thought about for so many years and finally happened, you know, within like the ninth year that we got listed. It was obviously very ecstatic, and yet it was like a lot of responsibility, you know. So you move from like a 30 investor base to like a 30,000 on day one. And today we are more than 70,000 investors, right? So that builds a lot of responsibility also, the way you are running the company and doing a lot of things.
How happy were the investors on the exit?
I think they were fairly happy.
How do you rate yourself? That's such a relative question. I mean, it's subjective also in many ways, because how would you satisfy somebody? Was it 10x, 20x? How happy were they, the guys who came in 10 years ago, for example?
So, I think the investors have really helped us in building the company, right?
Absolutely.
Like, we've had angel investors who had backed us when we had just a PPT and nothing, right? Just on a PowerPoint, they had backed us. And then we had institutional investors. And then we were fortunate to get a lot of interesting marquee angel investors along our journey, like Mr. Ratan Tata, Mr. Nandan, Mr. Mohandas Pai, right? And I think it's also, it feels good that you are also able to, you know, give them return back, you know, in your lifetime as a company. So, but for us, you know, obviously that initial capital was very helpful as we were building the whole infrastructure and the company.
Right. That's good. So when you say day zero, it also means time, like it's also an exam, man. I mean, you have to now sit in these calls and say something. What are some of the experiments that makes you say that, okay, when you talk to these analysts who ask you these questions, like I am today, but I wonder what are some of the experiments that would they appreciate the experimentation of what you're doing in with Gen AI coming in? People talk about artificial intelligence helping data-led companies. Do you get asked these kind of questions at all in India in the earnings call? Or would they say, how many markets have you gone to? How many people have you met? What are the kind of questions that interest you there?
So that's a very interesting question. Initially, my perception was that everyone was just focused on, you know, how's the quarter and the numbers. But what I realized is that people are actually asking questions, you know, like how are you using Gen AI?
Uh-huh.
Like this year, the AGM, the first question was around Gen AI. Last quarter, the first question was around Gen AI, which was very interesting that people really cared about how you're building the company in the long term as well. Because here also, you have a lot of long-term investors. So that was a very interesting difference that what
I
realized.
How do you take these questions? How do you take these questions? What would you tell them?
So, no, actually, this is something that, you know, you as a company have to, you know,
imbibe.
Be very good at. And I think for us, technology is one of the key pillars. And I think we have done, we probably have the best technology in across all private market data platforms today. Mm. And I think that continues to be our core IP and, you know, a USP. And we continue to invest in that. Like, even if you look at the DNA of the entire team,
yes.
right, it's very everyone actually understands tech. All the business leaders actually have to understand tech and be able to implement tech in the different departments. So I think for us, like Gen AI is a big enabler for us to be able to do that.
Okay. Right? There are some existential questions I want to ask you in terms of AI. And we'll move to AI because interesting for everybody. I was using RPC, LinkedIn Premium I was using, and I like to write stuff, and I wrote something about cars and mobility, which is going to be posted very soon. There was this feature that said, let the AI rewrite this. And it did rewrite it. Then I realized that it rewrote it really well. Mm. But then I realized that it wasn't any different. The message was the same as I said it, but it rewrote it in his style.
Mm.
So that's when I said, why should I use AI when I'm writing?
Right.
But the fact that it is there, but what I did is a couple of words that it used were really, for example, I used the word network, and it used the word collaborate, right? So it's funny, right? Then it plays in your mind. Oh, should I use this on network?
Right.
So, but I did use the word collaborate. It was interesting.
Right.
So you blend. So I used it as a blended approach, but a lot of people would think that their jobs would go or they'd be scared. How do you think this will play out within the data industry?
So I think if you have to be for long term, you have to be a good adopter for that. I think it just helps you in data creation.
Mm-hmm.
Simple things, right? Like, for instance, we have to classify out of the 700 million companies, what are the next set of companies which are into fintech?
Correct.
Or which are into robotics?
Yes.
Right? There we have realized that, you know, the automation, the level of automation increases a lot across the years.
Absolutely.
Right? The second thing is that even if you look at our teams, actually, you know, though our revenue would have increased in the last 3 years, our team size has actually been fairly range bound.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because of automation, right? Like, for instance, the number of people that I require to have to capture, say, financials in a particular country or global transactions, you know, that keeps reducing because of automation.
Right.
So I think you, today, I think for all the companies, you know, you have to be tech first. And I think only those companies will survive. It's not like, you know, you are having a different department to be. So there are two structures that I've seen in companies. One is, you know, they have a different department as AI. And then they figure out what else can they apply the thing to, right? Here, what we have done in our you know, organization, every department has their own tech team. There's a central tech team, which is for the platform, etc., which is a 100-member tech team. Plus, each department also has their own automation engineering team,
right,
which does all these things. So that's why you have to be very agile. So I think that is the that is a design that, you know, you need to be able to master to be able to, you know, be long term in this game.
It's very interesting. So if I became a customer of Traxen in the future, what I'd be doing is I just type some letters and say, look, I'm looking at this range, and then the AI would intuitively show me things. Or I could ask deeper questions saying, which is a company that I probably should invest in at this point of time, knowing the current market conditions. Would that be the journey for you?
So currently, our AI is behind, right? And we have experimented with that. For instance, you know, even when we ask the customers, would you want to give away your current interface for a chat-like interface? Their answer is typically no. That, you know, I really want to be able to, you know, like if you're talking to a public market investor, right? I want to be still able to be able to see like the working capital in a particular format that I've seen of the companies. Plus, you know, you would want to have this, but I think that's the AI, what is most useful that we have realized after speaking to a lot of customers is behind, right?
Like,
for instance, can I give you better comps? Like, if you're looking at comps of a particular company, right? Can I use all these tools to be able to give you better companies, right, more comprehensive companies, right? Second is that, you know, if you're looking at companies in a particular sector, can I help you mine those companies more comprehensively, new age companies which are coming up every day, right? So a lot of things actually goes behind the scene.
These are wonderful features,
And that helps in you in a lot of, accuracy. The third is basically accuracy of data.
Mm.
Right? Now you can validate a lot of the data sets which is there. That helps improve. So you're basically using this behind the scenes for the customers to be able to do their jobs well.
No, this is interesting. So the future is with tech, you cannot avoid it. What else can we expect from you for the next 1 year?
I think continue to, I think one of the things that we are focusing a lot of effort is continue to focus, grow our sales and marketing efforts, right? Because in the initial 10 years, I think you spend a lot of time in building the technology platform, etc. Right now, most of the people that we say, that we meet, the customers, they say, you know, you have really good data, really good interface. Now we have to reach out to a lot more people. So a lot of the initiatives that you see in the more recent quarters have been around sales and marketing, right? So that is one area that we are focusing on. The second is that expanding within the existing geographies that we have customers in, right? So there are geographies which have become large for us. You know, how do we basically expand the customers in those ones? The third is that we are also doing more of regulatory filings. So we realize that some of the customer segments, you know, want more financials, transaction share, etc. So we're actually going more deeper in that. So today, for instance, we have financials in over 20 countries, cap table, shareholding pattern, transactions over 20 countries. Right. So that is one thing that we have accelerated, I would say, in the last 1 year.
Right. Fantastic. And how do regulatory filings help companies and obviously investors to understand the roadmap of these companies and what they're doing in terms of IPO or anything else?
So a simple thing, like today, if you want to look at single specialty hospital chain, in addition to the list, you would also want the ones which are, say, more than 50 crores revenue in India versus, you know, you would have similar benchmarks across the other countries.
Right.
So just a blend of that just makes it more actionable, say, for some of the late stage investors.
So you'd want to call it compliance and regulatory aspects?
More regulatory and financial data from there.
Okay, got it. So that's the future that you want to work on. That's interesting. How do you unwind? I mean, 10 years is sometimes very hard. And, you know, it's a journey. And obviously, the objective is wealth. And you do make wealth with an IPO or otherwise also, especially a startup that lasts 10 years. Now you're off the startup compass. You're now a company, a small company or a SMB, they call it, right? Whatever you want to call it. But how do you unwind? How do you be mindful that, yes, I was a CEO. You're also a mother. You're also, you know, a wife and, you know, family. How do you detach, envision that, okay, there's one target in each of these places, right? And how do you detach from them? This would be great because nobody gets everything, right? But you manage to do pieces of these.
Right.
How do you detach and how do you be mindful?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I would say one of the things which has changed in the last, I would say, you know, 1 year, is my focus on health. So for instance, last year was probably the first year that I did every day 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. Class of yoga or of something else, right? And I was never that regular earlier. I think IPO is also one of the things that brings you subconsciously that now you are, you know, you are running on a marathon.
Correct.
Right? And it's not just sprint.
Yes.
Right. So so I think that was one of the key things is that, you know, you have a regular health sort of fitness routine, even on a Sunday. So my calendars, even on a weekend, is actually as busy as it is on a weekday.
Yeah.
The tasks may be different, right? So you start with like a, you know, morning fitness routine, and then you have other things. So on weekends, you'll have a lot more of meeting people or going out with family or attending to some of the other things, right? But it'll be equally, you know, there's a calendar even for weekends and everything is, you know, sort of on there. And of course, weekdays are, you know, packed with, you know, your work, which is there.
So you journal all this? You calendar all this, journal all this, or is it a mental time frame that you keep?
All on calendar.
Okay.
So, you know, you have
keeps
a really robust calendar, you know, for your personal life. So anything that needs to be, needs to get done, nothing is in my head. It's on my calendar.
Wow. So you're organized.
Yes.
It's important to do that, right? Isn't it? I mean, you can't I mean, yeah, the rush of building these things, right. You can't let it to chance, can you?
Right, exactly. And I think having a balance in both personal and professional, it kind of, you know, helps both ways.
Yeah.
You cannot have you feeling a little bit, you know, some vacuum in the personal life and be able to perform very well at, you know, at work, right? So to give you an example, if you want to feel that, okay, I want to book, I wish in a year, I would book like a vacation for my parents, right? And if you end up not doing it for 5 years, you will have this at the back of your head, right? And it doesn't take a lot of time,
and
actually.
It keeps eating
it
you.
Probably, yes. So, you know, you can actually find like a good agency to be able to do that. It probably takes you only like 1 hour. To be able to do that. But I think most important is that, you know, remembering that you have to do that and then doing it, you know, wherever you.
So journaling, calendaring it has helped you.
Yes, that has helped me immensely. And that has made me do a lot more things, even on the personal front, which I wanted to do.
Okay, good to know. Influences, I mean, you grew up in Bombay, obviously a city, a tough city to grow up in, a beautiful city to grow up in, because it makes you organized, you know. Has that rubbed off on you in your daily life on what you want to achieve, or your parents come from an entrepreneurial background? What rubbed off on you?
So my parents come from a very non-entrepreneurial background. So I grew up in a colony called BRC Colony, which is Bhabha Atomic Research Center Colony, wherein nearly half of the people, half of their parents are actually scientists.
Yes.
And my dad is from IIT Kanpur. He is actually a nuclear scientist. So it was, you know, my brother is also from IIT Bombay. So very academic environment that you actually grew up in.
So you're the first entrepreneur.
Yeah. So for me, it was more about, you know, obviously this problem that, you know, you thought that this has to be solved globally.
But how could, I mean, when you're surrounded by scientists, do they look at business people as, you know, people who, you know, what did they say about business people?
So they scientists? Were, so, you know, like I had a good stint in terms of corporate
Correct.
Jobs also that I did. And when they, when we were actually starting, they actually did not understand why you starting, you know, actually startups in, this was in 2013 when startups was not very popular, you know, as a career option.
And if you're in a central government job, you're set, right? In a sense, you have the colony, you have the school close by, you have a set of friends, right? That's, they would have
and my initial job for like a consulting and, yes, and a private and VC.
Right?
And you're leaving that for like a job which does not pay. So, and you're spending money.
So that concept so you had explained
not,
to them?
Yeah. So they could not understand. And until I would say probably, you know, like they saw that we got angel funding from Mr. Ratan Tata.
Yeah,
then they realized that, okay, maybe you were doing something, you know, interesting.
No, so that so was that's so heartening to hear. So you come from an academic family, obviously became, I mean, would you say that your father and brother had a lot of influence on you, or was it books at the time? Was it other people?
Yeah, I think my family as well as, you know, your peers network has had a lot of influence in basically in strong fundamentals, I would say, in general. You know, the fact that, you know, the first version was coded by me, right? Like, so I could do that only because of a lot of things, you know, that you actually learned, you know, like you started coding probably in college.
Yeah.
Early on, before you actually even went to undergrad. Right. So all of these things kind of influenced you in what you eventually became.
But if you're an undergrad computer science, you must be a top student then. You know, your 10th grade and 12th grade must be phenomenal, out of the roof kind of marks, right?
Right.
Well, how do you, I mean, just, how do you see the future in terms of, do you see kids today? I mean, a lot of people today say that you don't have to study to do a startup or something. Would that be right to talk about that? Is what is a general viewpoint for you? Do you still think they have to grow through a grind of work, work somewhere, then start up?
So there are different schools.
Yes.
I still believe that you should work in a corporate or in a good and good setup.
Yes.
A couple of years, you know, it doesn't have to be long, a couple of years, just to understand what is an org like. Right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think initial, like if you look at the entire journey of a company, initially, you know, it's the 0 to 1 wherein you have to do the product market fit, etc., you know, which you are, as a hustler, you are able to do that. But eventually you have to solve a lot of other things, right? Like org building, etc., that you do. I think having seen that in a good place, it just gives you a lot of framework to work with, like, you know, what is the basis? And when I say it should not be like a very slow MNC, I would say it can be a startup, it can be a good thriving company, or even an MNC, which is very agile. So I think there's a lot of value in having spent like even like a couple of years in working in a good setup to basically see some of the basic ground rules, you know, how are these things done? How is an appraisal done? How is the reporting done? Right? What is the relationship between the different levels levels of the org.
Did you learn all that?
Yeah, yeah. So I'd seen it, you know, in the different jobs. That, yes. Yeah.
And so but you used to... it, which is amazing.
Right. Eventually, so you at that time, you don't realize it. But then when you are designing a lot of things up front, then, you know, you have it subconsciously in the back of the head, which is very helpful, I would say.
Fantastic. And do you read a lot? Are you a person who reads a lot or who watches a lot more plays or OTT kind of content?
So I'm a person who reads less, like more it's the news that I spend time on. And then I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Okay.
So long format.
Anything as well you'd as recommend small. Us, I'd love to hear. What is history, it's business, or what do you...
Mainly business.
Like. Okay.
And there are a lot of other ones, you know, like you read Tech Meme, you read a few long formats.
Yes.
If someone is interested in long format, there's another, there's a popular podcast called Acquired, which is actually started by a classmate of mine in Stanford.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. So this actually covers businesses in a very long format. Like, you know, they would cover like Costco or a Visa.
Oh, they come with like examples.
So they would do like a deep dive on, say, a company like Costco on a 2 to 3 hour kind of a podcast. So they would cover the entire history.
Well, that's interesting in America, right? There are all sorts of this content happening.
Right, yeah. And there are a lot of things that you realize you did not know. Like, you know, like I was hearing the Visa podcast recently and I did not know how, you know, Visa is such a prominent brand, like everyone uses it. But how was a company born, right? To see the entire journey and, you know, so that is very interesting.
Yeah, that's something and I'd be interested. I'm glad you told me because I know they have switches all over the US and I know the tech story.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how, what they started off as. I'll definitely want to go check it out.
Yes.
So, no, thank you for that. And all the best to Traxon and obviously, you know, year zero after IPO and all that. So congrats to you.
And, thanks so much for having me.
No, and we should do more. And I'm going to perhaps, like I said, I like using data and it's about time I get to use real data and perhaps come to the Traxon office and check it out.
For sure. Would love to host you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.